Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to our show. We are Three Women, Three Ways. We're the three of us from different backgrounds and a lot of shared commonality, but a lot of differences. Get together and we talk about things that affect women, affect the world, affect us. And we hope you join us. Our phone number is 646-378-0430. That's 646-378-0430. And today we have a very timely topic. But first, let me introduce, or let our co-hosts introduce themselves. And let's go to Deborah. Tell us about yourself.
Hey, good morning. This is Deborah Adams, and I'm excited to be here with you all. I am a lifelong advocate and a lifelong learner, and my tagline as far as this topic of domestic violence is I've lived it, I've studied it, and I've worked it. And I'm working on doing this work differently right now, more positively focused in talking about social and cultural change. How about you, Connie Sue?
Well, good morning, ladies, and good morning, listeners. Yep, this is Connie Sue, also known as the Pink Lady. I am a survivor of domestic violence and have been working in the field now going on 15 years. So I feel that my expertise lends well to our show today about violence against women. And I am excited about being here this morning.
Well, very good. And I have kind of an academic background, as does Deborah. I'm working on a PhD in psychology with a focus on domestic violence, and I'm just about to the point where I'm starting my dissertation. Actually, I am starting my dissertation, and it's going to be about the effect of domestic violence on future work for survivors. So we all have this interest, we all have this expertise, and we want to talk today about domestic violence and the holidays. Pinkley, you want to get started?
Well, I thought it would be really interesting to talk about surviving the holidays if you are in a domestic violence relationship. And for clarity of our show this morning, we want to just define what domestic violence is. And it's not just the hitting, but about the emotional and psychological and spiritual and economic control. It is about controlling someone else. And I thought it would be just an enlightening piece today to talk about how potentially things can escalate during the holidays, but that because people generally want to keep their families together, the coping mechanisms that can interplay in the holidays. Holidays can be a stressful time for anyone, but particularly if you're living in an abusive relationship. And maybe for our listeners, if they're not sure if they're in an abusive relationship, we'll get some ideas about what that might look like for them and know that it's not them that's crazy or making things up, or that it's not them adding stress to the holidays, but really about a person who needs to have control over this situation. So those are my thoughts today about our show.
Well, you know, you brought up an interesting thing, which is, you know, that it's not just the physical abuse. And I think, you know, from my own experience, the emotional abuse of the holidays was even higher. And I think you know, you tend to think when you're living through it that it's just the stress or it's, you know, the pressure from other people or whatever. But looking back, I think that because my focus was more on doing things for the kids, you know, making preparations, other family members were, you know, very much in the forefront. And it's almost like that attention taken away from him made things worse. Deborah, does that make sense to you?
It does. And as far as all this, the talking about whether domestic violence increases during a holiday is, again, that is an outsider question, I would say. It's someone who has not ever experienced it, of course, that's asking that question. Because what we know is domestic violence in all of its forms continues regardless of holidays. It doesn't stop for any specific reason. It's a non-linear, non-rational experience. So
you know,
I think,
Deborah,
yeah.
I just want to throw in something that supports what you're saying. I'm on the VAWA website, the Violence Against Women website, and the reason that I think a lot of people think that domestic violence increases dramatically during holidays is because there are increased media and public attention to domestic violence during the holidays, at least according to VAWA.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, everybody likes to think that it's not going to get worse during a holiday, and I think that's pretty much a fallacy. But, you know, the one thing that we all know, too, the three of us sitting here, is that the more serious, violent, abusive behaviors occur behind closed doors. So if your holiday is centered around going out socially and being with other families and leaving, you know, kind of leaving your own personal home and going out to the public, then maybe there would be less chance of, you know, a physical assault happening. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Pinkley, what do you think?
Well, I think that just to reiterate what Deb said, it happens at any point in time. There's not a specific time when it potentially will escalate during the holidays, but I do think that it adds pressure to a family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you're in an abusive relationship, that would be the time when you're working the hardest to keep it together, when
mm-hmm.
it's really not about you, but about the other person. But if you're a mom, you know, the expectations of having the perfect Christmas or holiday for your family, whatever faith you so choose to participate in, I just, you know, it's about surviving. And I would think that the phones would start ringing off the hook maybe after the first of the year for the hotline.
Well, that's interesting. Again, according to this website, it says that a 2005 study showed that police incident reports went up on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So those were higher.
Holidays that are deemed worse or higher rates of domestic violence, but I don't know if I agree with that or not. What I think might be a causal relationship to all this is which holidays encourage the incidence of drinking alcohol or,
are you equating alcohol drinking with domestic violence?
There is a relationship. It's not causal, right? That makes it worse. It doesn't cause the violence to happen, but what happens when people drink or use drugs is their inhibitions go down, and therefore they will do things that they may not do when they're 100% completely sober. It's not an excuse, and it's not a justification. It just increases the danger level as far as I'm concerned.
Hmm. Well, no matter how you look at it, the holidays can be risky, either more risky or just as risky. And so what do we do, Pinkley? What does a woman who's experiencing this do?
Well, I think that the first thing I would encourage someone to do is to tell a trusted friend or family member. There may not be the expected change in the relationship that most people equate domestic violence. Again, that why doesn't she just leave? But to give the person some emotional support, there's also hotlines that a person can call in. And if they have questions, whether or not they're in a domestic violence relationship or, you know, just getting some support in some ways that they can be validated. And, Heather, you've got that number for the hotline, for the national hotline. Can you give a shout-out for that?
Oh, I can, and all I have to do is flip to it again. here we go. 1-800-799-7233.
And that's the National Domestic Violence Hotline. And what they will do is be able to listen to the person and then find out which location they're in, and they can usually transfer the caller to someone, a service that's closer to them. And they can also give them resources for later. They do some advocacy on the hotline, and I'm pretty sure, I would hope, they do safety planning on the national hotline. You know, I've never actually called it, but I know it's a trusted and well-respected resource. So I encourage anybody who has a question about domestic violence, whether it's holidays or not, to start there and get a feel for what is possible, what's out there for them.
Yeah. Well, and I think Pinkley made such a good point, which is sometimes, especially with emotional abuse, the victim doesn't really realize that that is abuse. That, I think, and we had this discussion a couple times before, Connie Sue, about do we really as a public, as a general public, understand what domestic violence is? And my contention is that we're really good about understanding that hitting is domestic violence and not acceptable. But I don't think there's the same awareness as far as the psychological abuse, the emotional abuse that goes on, and I think that that awareness also is lacking in some victims. They know they're miserable. They know they're uncomfortable. They know they don't like this, but they're not considering it abuse. Deb, you
right.
Know that?
Yeah, I was going to say that. I think this is Deborah. I think that one of the most important things is for a person to do is actually acknowledge it's happening to them. And that's a very scary and frightening place to be at, because there's a lot of shame and humiliation that goes with that acknowledgement, right?
Yeah.
You don't want. Oh, sorry. Sorry, turn my.
Well, holiday music might, for us, Deborah.
This is Pinkley, and it might not even be like the expected. I mean, there may not be a change of the situation during a holiday or maybe at any point. But I think that when I thought of the topic surviving the holidays, I think it's more about validation, like maybe having one of those aha moments and saying, wow, this really isn't about me. I mean, I can speak from experience that every single holiday that came around, I would say to myself, okay, this time it will be different. I will make it all better. Whatever I learned from the year before that wasn't perfect, I will change it, when really, in fact, it wasn't about my changing it. It was about the person that I was married to. It was the expectation. And I would anticipate that if someone's experiencing some sort of economical abuse, that would certainly heighten during the holidays, because there is this expectation to be able to provide all the gifts or the presents for the children and relatives and so on and so forth. And, it was the expectation of make this all perfect, buy all the gifts, wrap all the gifts, make the dinner, prepare for the dinner, do the Christmas tree. And then in the end, it was always the question of, well, why did you spend so much money?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it made no sense to me. So I thought it was absolutely, I mean, I would never have been able to define at that particular time that that's what we call crazy making. It's a setup to fail is really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the pressure is put on you, and really it's about the abuser losing or not having control over the situation, but having these heightened expectations of someone else that are totally unrealistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That you can't handle money. You can't handle money. I remember, this is a little off the holiday subject, but I remember my husband handled all the money because he was in a business where all of our money came through him and into his business first, and that gave him tremendous control economically. But he would allocate like $2,000 to me for the month, and the mortgage was $1,500. How am I supposed to pay all the other bills, buy the groceries for $500, with $500, and then when I'd have to go back to him to get more money, he would start giving me the grief about not being able to handle money, and I'm a spendthrift, and I'm this, and I'm that, and the other thing, you know, when in fact there isn't anybody who can run a family for $500 a month.
Right.
So, yeah. And so, but, you know, in trying to explain that to somebody else, they said, well, everybody argues about money.
Right. I think that that's part of our mission, of course, is to educate the public about the pattern of abusive behaviors that occurs. It's not just one incident. Although our criminal justice system will look at it if it's a one-time incident. But what we're talking about is a pattern of abusive behaviors that happens over time. And generally, the time between those abusive behaviors shortens and the type of abusive behavior escalates. And that is really hard to illustrate to the public if they can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
and
the holidays just compounds that whole dynamic for the survivor or victim of violence, because even if you don't have children, You still have family. You still have family expectations. And we live in a society where, you know, the Norman Rockwell picture of the holidays, where we're just all lovey-dovey and it's always good and positive. And what we know, the reality is that's not always true for families.
Yeah. Well, and what about my original point of, you know, that attention given to other family members during the holidays always seemed to really set off my husband and escalate abuse from because of that. Have you ever seen anything? I mean, is that typical? Have you seen that kind of thing? You know, the focus on somebody other than him and his needs. Pinkley?
Yeah. This is Pinkley. Yeah, I would concur with that 100%. And I actually hadn't even thought about it until you mentioned it. There's other factors that are in your life, other family members that come into play. And again, it was that expectation of that Norman Rockwell picture that Deborah describes. And then I remember people leaving afterwards, and it was always a denigrate of, your family this and your family that and your family this. But yet, from my experience, he wanted people around. He enjoyed it during the time, but there was always that explosion that would come after, not so much during, but after. Mm-hmm. And so I just think to get validation and support, if you're listening, survivors, if you're not really sure, is just getting that validation that it's not you. I think that would bring a great sense of relief and awareness for you, not just during the holidays, but any time of the year. And especially if you don't necessarily have experienced the physical abuse.
Yeah. Again, that hotline number is 1-800-799-7233. And you can just call that number. You don't have to be absolutely certain that this is what you're experiencing. You don't have to be wanting to leave. You don't have to have a game plan at this point. You can just call that number to talk with them, and they'll direct you to somebody closer, you know, some organization that's a little bit closer to your home if it's, you know, because this is the national number. But 1-800-799-7233. And you can reach out and you can help with some getting some clarity on your situation and maybe help make plans for yourself. so it's a very good, handy number to have. And I also want to invite you to join our conversation, 646-378-0430. That's 646-378-0430. And we're talking about domestic violence and abuse and the holidays, because we're coming up all sorts of them. Just that whole bundle of winter holidays can sometimes make things pretty tough for somebody who's experiencing that, or for somebody who doesn't realize that that's what they're experiencing. They just know they're kind of miserable and that there's this pattern of behavior. So that's what we're talking about. We want you to come and join us. Just give us a call, and we'll include you in their conversation, which we'd love to do. Deborah, from your personal experience, did you see things escalate around the holiday time?
I hated holidays, to be honest with you. I had 4 kids, and I loved my extended family, but there was so much tension in our household because we just never had enough money, and we always had to do what he wanted to do. That was first and foremost.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to express my opinions very often with that. And so I got to the point where I absolutely hated it. I had to put on the happy front, though, because I have 4 children.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what Connie Sue described is that thing that happened after all the, you know, the public, the family events was just, it just wore me out. It wore me down. I didn't feel, I got to the point where I was numb inside. And I really hope that we can help people realize that it's not just the survivor victim who should tell someone that they trust. It's also us as family members that can initiate that conversation in a safe place, at the right time, in a confidential way. But I would have been felt very supported if people would have said to me, you know, the way he treated you is wrong. You know, he's putting you down. I don't like the way he talks to you. Maybe some of those kinds of conversation, or that I think what just happened was abusive. Do you think it's abusive? If someone would have even posed that question to me, I'm hoping it could have changed my mind. And I'm in no way blaming my extended family and friends. I'm not blaming them for anything. I'm just saying it would have been really wonderful had they initiated the conversation with me, too. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think I would have felt threatened, and my first response would have been defensive.
Okay.
Because this is my family. And,
mm-hmm.
gosh, I mean, everybody feels tension during the holidays. Everybody experiences something like that. And, golly, I just quit making such a big deal out of this. I think that would have been my initial reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would have given me something to think about down the road, because I knew that this couldn't be right. And for a long, you know, this relationship, and for a long time, I blamed myself. I used to tell people I just wasn't cut out for marriage. That's what it is. I'm just not cut out for marriage. And so I think, my initial reaction to something like that would have been defensive and excuse-making. But it would have given me something to think about.
Yeah.
And it would have added. Pinkley, did anybody ever do that for you?
No, I think everybody, well, I don't know. I think that people suspected, but nobody came and approached me about it. I just became even more internally thinking that it was all me and that it was that I was going crazy. And for the most part, he put on a pretty good front in front of family and friends. But there was, I can always say that there was always that underlying tension.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it wasn't so much recognized with other people, but I could feel it. I knew at some point things were going to explode.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, every year during the holidays, I would always say to myself, okay, this year will be different. I will make it all better. And sure enough, after pretty much everybody left after the holidays, there was a pretty much explosive pattern of behavior, and then it was all about me and blaming me that this wasn't right and this wasn't right. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that part of me too, probably like you, Heather, would have become a little bit defensive, making excuses for him.
Yeah.
Because
this is your relationship too, and I think that I know that for me, and I think for a lot of people, Our culture just kind of says relationships are the woman's responsibility. If it's miserable, it's your fault, and if it's happy, good for you. But I think, you know, again, my example of the women's magazines. I mean, you pass the magazine counter, and I've never seen a Field and Stream with a cover article saying how to make your spouse happy or how to keep him, you know, at home or how to keep her from straying. Or, you know, it's always the push for the woman to be the one who is responsible for the success of the relationship. And so I think that would have been a little threatening because, you know, they're also kind of nailing you.
Right.
When they're making a comment about things not being correct. But
well, I can really appreciate that both of you expressed that because I probably would have felt the same way too. But my point is, what you brought out so eloquently, Heather, is that it would have given you something to think about down the road. And maybe you could have started connecting your own dots. And Pinkley, what I like about what you're talking about, that explosion, and I think anybody who's in any kind of abusive relationship understands what you mean when you say that explosion. And what you're really saying is that was some kind of abusive behavior that you knew was going to happen, and you were just kind of walking on eggshells waiting for it to happen.
Yes, and of course it was always something that I thought that I could control and make all better.
Yeah,
that it was
yeah.
my responsibility to keep the explosion from happening. And
right.
then at some point, we'll talk about the honeymoon phase. At some point, you just want it to be over with, just explode, and then we know that things will settle down for a little bit, and then you can go right back into the honeymoon phase.
Well, you guys are talking again about Walker's cycle of violence, where the violence builds, it occurs, then there's that honeymoon phase you're talking about where he apologizes for whatever reason, he kind of calms down, and you know you're good for a little bit before that pressure starts to build again. There are some relationships that are abusive that are more linear. There really isn't that cycle. And so, you know, each relationship doesn't necessarily get the honeymoon phase.
Or the tension building.
Yeah, it's just tension, more tension, more tension, and it's just kind of an escalation over time without any real, oh, I'm sorry, or gosh, here, things are good, it's good times now. So I see it more as a linear escalation. You know, just kind of like that line going gradually up, up, up toward the right side of the graph,
mm-hmm.
Without any of those dips into good times. But I actually have read a study that says some women who experience violence in their homes will time it, and they will purposely trigger it. So, for example, if a kid's birthday party, for example, is on Saturday, and she knows it's been a couple weeks since he blew, that she will actually start to get him to blast, you know, to have that explosion so that it's over by the time the kid has his birthday party. And they don't
right.
have to worry about that. Yeah. I mean, so the adaptability of victims is astounding to me, absolutely astounding.
Yeah, I want to clear with our listeners that we're not suggesting that domestic violence is a lack of control or because of anger.
Mm-hmm.
When we say blow, we mean some abusive behavior happens. When we say explosion, we mean some kind of abusive behavior happens. And there's this whole thought in general public that domestic violence is about anger and that you know, maybe an anger management class would resolve the issue for families. But that's not the case. What we're really talking about, again, is this pattern of abusive behaviors. And Heather described it just right. Often survivors, and I myself did that, would initiate some behavior that would cause that extreme abusive event to happen, in order to try to manage it so it would be the more calm for that other particular occasion. I did that myself. I'm not proud of it now, but at the point of time, I saw it as absolutely necessity.
Yep. But you do what you can do to manage the circumstances in which you live.
Right.
And for most of us, you know, we don't have a lot of experience with relationships. We see the one that our parents had, and then we play at relationships when we're dating. But then when we are actually in a relationship, a long-term, supposedly committed relationship with someone, either marriage or long-term, or the only example we have of successful relationships is pretty much what we've seen in our families.
Mm-hmm.
And they could be great, but we just don't have a lot of experience with what makes a successful relationship. And when you start seeing some of this aberrant behavior, some of the blow, you know, some of the abusive behavior popping out, I think there is a tendency to make some excuses. It's like, well, this just isn't, you know, I mean, this must just be part of marriage. I mean, and be like me, where, well, I wasn't cut out for marriage. I was assuming that marriage was what he was, what was what I was experiencing. And
mm-hmm.
since I didn't like it, I just kept saying, well, I guess I'm not cut out for marriage. But, you know, I'm here. I've got a couple kids. I'm going to do the best I can.
Right. Well, and I actually lived in an abusive relationship for 17 years. It never occurred to me that I should call the police and report what was happening in our house. It never occurred to me.
Did you experience physical abuse, Deborah?
Some.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So why do you think it didn't occur
to
you?
Like the pushing, slapping, the intimidation, definitely, where they, you know, would blow a hole in the wall right next to your head.
Mm-hmm.
Tipping the dining room table when we're all sitting there eating. Yeah, we had physical abuse, but it never occurred to me that that would be something that you would ask an outside agency to intervene in.
Yeah, and again, I think that that's some social conditioning. I mean, we have grown up thinking that what happens in the home is stays in the home. It's kind of like Las Vegas, you know?
Right.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and
right.
you don't go telling a bunch of people about it.
So do you think that plays into someone's motivation to report violence to an outside agency, or do you have any theories or thoughts on that?
Well, I think that a survivor in a situation like that who initiates outside intervention, particularly through law enforcement, takes on the responsibility of the incident,
mm-hmm.
and which is really unfortunate because it's not their actions, it's the actions of the abuser that caused this particular event.
What do you mean takes on the responsibility?
I think that not always, but sometimes the victim will say, well, this was my fault because I called. I made this call and they were just having a bad day, or for whatever reason, all the excuses that come into the play, or just not being aware. Therefore, you have initiated the change of the relationship. Once you make that call, a change has occurred. You're no longer in the environment that's status quo. And abusers demand and expect the status quo for whatever that is. And if you are making a change to that, whether it be calling a helpline or calling law enforcement or even reaching out to a family member or friend, they thrive off of the isolation piece. And I think that it would be very, very difficult for someone to call law enforcement during a holiday setting or the holidays. And I think for the purpose of my intent of talking about this today is not necessarily to give people coping strategies, but just a heightened awareness that there is this demand. It's culturally expected of us to have this perfect Christmas or this perfect holiday season. And when you're in an abusive relationship, the expectation of that is nearly impossible, in my opinion. So it's just the relationship of knowing that this isn't about you. This is about another person's behavior and control over the situation, that you'll never be able to make it perfect. So I think that's just really an unfair, it's a hardship. It's an additional hardship to a family, for a mom or a person to be thinking that it's their responsibility and they're now to facilitate this perfect holiday season.
Yeah. And we all try to do that, those of us with kids and who do the Christmas thing. And, that is so important to us. You know, we seem to all have bought into the myth that it has to be perfect at this time of year. It has to be perfect for the children.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, there used to be some saying, which I can't remember, unfortunately, but about a duck looking calm on the water, but underneath she's paddling like crazy.
Yeah.
And I always thought of that especially the holidays, because you have not only the normal stuff you have to do, the everyday stuff you have to do, the washing, the cleaning, the school, the this, that, the other thing, but then you also have these added pressures of trying to make, as you said, Connie Sue, a perfect holiday. You want the tree, you want the decorations, you're probably trying to figure out some way to entertain, you're running the kids from party to party, you're trying to do the Christmas shopping, you're adding all of this extra pressure. And when you have that, that's bad enough even if you have a wonderful relationship. But when you throw in a relationship that's abusive on top of all that, the pressure is just extraordinary. Sometimes, I don't know about you ladies, but sometimes I look back and I think, how did I ever do that? How? You know, it just seems so extraordinary.
Yeah, I don't question myself, but a lot of people question me. How did you do that?
Yeah.
How did you live through that? And I'm like, honest to God, I don't know. There's a lot of holes in my memory of that experience, you know. Particularly after I left, there was a lot of times where I have actually blocked out the memory of it. But I think this boils down to the same thing we asked last week, which was, are we asking the right questions? Are we asking the right question when we ask, does domestic violence increase around holidays? You know, what else would we like our media to focus on instead of this particular question, which does seem to leave a lot of responsibility, again, in the hands of the victim survivor.
Well, one of the things, can I do a plug for my book here? Why Doesn't
Sure.
She Just Leave? A New Perspective on Domestic Violence, Women, Real Stories. And in that book, which I wrote, and it's available on Amazon, we give some things that the reader can do if you are not experiencing the violence, but you have a friend or family member who is. And one of those things is to start talking about men's violence against women as a men's issue. We talk about it as a woman's issue. We do it. Everybody does it. It's not. It's a man's issue. I remember years and years and years ago, I read a biography of Indira Gandhi, who, as you probably know, was a wonderful leader in India. And they were having problems with rapes. And she was at a governmental meeting where they were trying to deal with this. And one of the things that they suggested was to put a curfew on women, get the women off the streets, so that they wouldn't be out there as available.
Causing
the men
to rape.
Yeah, and of course, she slammed that. And she goes, if we're going to put a curfew on somebody, put it on the men. They're the ones that are doing the raping.
Exactly.
And I think we need, as a public, to start talking about domestic violence as a man's issue. It is women suffer from it. But it is a man's issue. Men are doing something that is not a healthy thing to do.
Awesome.
Pinkley, what do you think?
Well, I could play the little devil's advocate and say, well, it's worked for men all these years. Why would they want it to be their issue? Why would they want to change? It works for them.
Yeah, that's true.
it's worked for years and eons. It's the patriarchy that that can fall into this. And so, again, I totally concur with you. It's not about why doesn't she just leave, or you know, the question should be, why doesn't the abuse stop? And to take some of that pressure off. And I think that the most important thing that you can do for a survivor is to believe them and to point things out to them and to question and to care and concern and not say, well, why don't you just leave? And again, it's that if you're living through a holiday in an abusive relationship, there's so much pressure on you to make it all perfect and to make sure that nothing happens and to live up to the expectations. And I also think it's really very sad that men who are abusive, it is really about the loss of their own self-worth, the loss of their own ability to self-regulate and, you know, not have all this pressure put on one person to say, I need for you to make this all better for me and to fix me. And that's really what they're saying.
So what question would you the media or the general public to be asking?
Why does he do that? Why doesn't the abuse stop?
Why as a society are we expecting women and children to leave their homes? Why mm-hmm. is it that our community can't rally around a family and say, you know, this needs to stop and you need to go to XYZ or go someplace else and continue the support of the family, the women and the children? And those, I think, are the questions that we should be asking. It takes our community, it takes our family, it takes our friend. Why would we want to isolate someone going into shelter and thinking that that is the be-all, fix-all for domestic violence? It's not.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. And I also think that, you know, we're talking a lot about women as victims, and you will hear people say, well, men are victims too. And yeah, they are. Actually, my father was abused by my mother. However, the percentage of man against woman violence is so overwhelming. I mean, it's like generously maybe 10%, and that's being a very generous number for woman on man violence. So when we're talking about women as victims, that's because they are, you know, in these situations. And that does not preclude a man being a victim. And I think that that's a whole different show, talking about men as victims, but it's a different set of expectations. It's a different set of behaviors. It's a very different conversation than what we're talking about here, especially with the holidays. Deborah, do you think?
I think, you know, my question would be is what social and cultural norms are supporting this? What, you know, we've had a women's movement since the early 1900s, right, with the temperance movement and the right to vote movement, and then in the 60s and 70s, it's about women's liberation. And, you know, so I just think that, why do we still have this going on, even though we've been aware of it for years? I mean, my studies showed me that this happened, you know, the first actual battered women's shelters were the where the nuns lived. If a woman was beaten up, she could go to where the nuns were housed, and she could stay with them. So
yeah,
this is like the 1200s, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I have a few, I mean, what's our classic caveman visual that we all grew up with? The caveman with his club dragging the woman by the hair into the cave.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Who hasn't seen that, you know?
So, I mean, why do we still have this? What is it about our culture and our society that condones this and supports this and perpetuates it? That's, for me, where I want to spend some time going and looking into and making the changes there. And that is just, it seems an insurmountable task with the way the media is. I know that in our, you know, in our election that there was a lot of focus on the war on women, and there's media would go to male experts to ask about the war on women.
Yeah.
It seems a little absurd. you know, in the 21st century that that's where they're going to for their information instead of to the source.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the one thing that keeps us all together is our sense of hope or our resilience. And Heather, I'm really going to be curious to see what you find out in your PhD study about those kinds of topics, if that's going to be included in your topic about the resilience of the human spirit. Because I think that's what keeps us in those relationships, and then that's what gets us out of the relationship at the same time, which seems contradictory.
No, it doesn't seem contradictory. In all of the research that I've done, the overwhelming reason that women stay, at least for a time, within an abusive relationship is for her children. Either the economics or the security of the home. As you mentioned, if a woman decides to leave, she's usually the one that has to leave the home with the kids. Well, that's a daunting thing, especially if you don't have a lot of family. And we've already talked about how isolation plays such a part here in the domestic violence scenario. So if you don't have a lot of social support, you don't have a lot of family support, and you are dependent economically, you really, really have to think twice and then some about leaving that relationship. And I know I hear criticism a lot from people who don't understand the whole domestic violence dynamic, but, oh, well, he was arrested and she took him back. Well, how else is she going to support her family? I mean, there are reasons. And, you know, I think one of the most recent studies that I've read about women and terminating relationships made the point that this is not some random wussy, you know, oh, I'm going to take him back kind of thing. These women are making rational decisions. Is this going to be better for my children to stay or better for my children to leave? And the fact is they do not leave that relationship until they can say yes to that question. Yes, as bad as this is, it's better than if I leave. Or it is time to leave, because whatever awful hardships are out there, they're better than staying here. And I think, you know, getting back to the whole holiday theme, you know, I think sometimes these can be pivotal times where our expectations for relationships, our expectations for our family are so high, and when we don't meet those expectations, it's a good time to be thinking about, is this an isolated situation? Is this a pattern? Why is it that this ideal holiday didn't occur? What do you think, Pinkley?
I think that those questions are really valid and really important. And I think just the awareness piece is can be so empowering for a person, and to realize that it's not about them. It is about another person and their need for control. And I think that was the whole hope of this conversation today for me, was just to bring awareness to that. No expectation of leaving, making a change, but at least you have some awareness of this isn't about you, this is about another person. And I think that that could actually relieve, bring a sense of relief to a relationship, and some, as Deb pointed out, some hope and resilience. And let me tell you, for our listeners, there is no greater resilience a person can have than to survive and to live through an abusive relationship, because you really are the one holding it together.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that whole image of the weak little abused woman is such a misnomer. I mean,
yes.
Abused women are the strongest women I have ever seen in my life.
Absolutely.
Because they learn to manage their families.
In extreme circumstances.
Yes, there you go. That's it exactly. Well,
yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about friends and family. If I have a relative, if I have a friend, and I suspect or just downright know that her relationship is an abusive one, especially around this time of the year, What can I do? What can I do to help that situation?
Well, Heather,
I know you weren't wanting to focus on solutions, but I'm such a solutions person.
No, I like that. I think that the biggest support you can offer is that you're there for them and you believe them. and that it isn't about, it's not you not being perfect, and who is?
Mm-hmm.
And just to bring the awareness piece out, and I'm here to support you in your decisions, and are you at a place maybe where you can talk about different options? Leaving is not a one-time event. Leaving is definitely not a one-time event. And neither is abuse. It is an ongoing pattern of behavior that's abnormal, and you're trying to live in a normal way in this relationship. As you pointed out, relationships are hard anyway without the abuse cycle and all of that power and control and dynamics. So as a family member or a friend or clergy or any person that is out there that is wanting to support someone, I would say to just bring it to their attention in a loving and caring way and say, I'm here to support you in whatever decisions you make.
Mm-hmm. And realize.
Yeah, I often, when I would do training with new volunteers, and they'd say, well, I need tools and skills to do this, you know. And I would say, well, the number one tool you need are your ears. Because if you can just sit and listen without talking, without judgment, that's going to be almost the best thing you can do for your friend if they need to talk about what's going on in their life. Don't talk back, you know, don't fix it. Don't give them solutions. Just hear them. And as Connie says, that indicates that you're hearing them and you're validating and supporting them. So that's really a very key tool and a key skill to have when you want to help someone. It doesn't, I know, Heather, it's not very action-oriented. And it's not very visual what you can actually do to support someone, but it really would be an excellent start for sure.
Well, now, see, my advice to a friend or loved one is, first of all, educate yourself. You think you might know about domestic violence, you think you might know about abusive relationships, but chances are you really don't. Chances are all you have learned is what the media, you know, what popular culture says is a domestic violence situation. And you really need to educate yourself if you hope to help. The other thing is, you cannot be an advocate. Advocates have special skills, they've trained, they've learned what they do. The best thing that I think you can do to help your loved one is to give them that hotline and let them know you'll be right there with them if they want you. Give them, turn them over to the experts, direct them to the experts, keep the phone numbers of the local shelter, keep that 800 number, and have that available for the person. What do you think of my advice, Pinkley?
Well, I would disagree with you on some level. And, yes, advocates are trained, but advocates don't know the person on a personal level. And I think that there is so much that can happen within that that relationship that you have, that you can trust someone. And I think that the best advice you can give someone is, you know your situation better than anyone else. And to trust your own intuition. There's that inner voice that we have a tendency to not listen to. And if you have someone who's supporting that internal voice, supporting your choices, and that's really what an advocate is about, is to support someone's choice, but also to point out, you know, different options. Yes, advocates are the expert, but for me personally, if I was to have a family member or a friend support me, which I did, thank goodness, in trusting my inner voice, trusting what I believe, trusting my experiences, I think that's the best kind of support you can give someone.
That's
well, and I appreciate what Heather's saying. Educate yourself is so important. It's really not up to your friend who's living in an abusive relationship to educate you. You know, you need to come with that knowledge yourself so that you can be supportive and loving to them. I
Absolutely.
Also think that Heather, I would have never spoken to anybody. I never spoke to anybody about it in 17 years. I would have never called a hotline. I would have never spoken to anybody professionally about it. And so that's a good thing, though, that we're talking about different ways people can reach out depending on your personal, you know, your characteristics and everything. So I think there's value definitely in what you say, if people are brave enough to do that, because it takes a lot of courage to talk about it publicly.
Yes.
And I didn't have that. I didn't have that courage at, you know, it took me 17 years. What I did have is what Connie Sue mentioned, was that one family member that when I finally decided that this was going to be the last time I left, who loved me and supported me, that really made it happen for me. I only needed one person who loved me and supported me.
Yeah.
And I was able to stay away finally. But it wasn't until after that, even, you know, I think it was about 3 or 4 years after that, that I started saying I was in an abusive relationship. I don't know what it was about me. I was, I guess, in total denial. But
well, you know, you and I were very similar in that, because I also had a very long term, longer than yours, relationship. And my mantra became, I wasn't cut out for marriage. I wasn't cut out for marriage. But I would never have said, because until kind of like the final episode, there was no physical contact, just awful, awful psychological stuff. And we were talking before the show about how that, you know, a lot of studies show that for a woman who experiences physical violence as well as emotional violence, they'll take the physical violence anytime over the emotional.
Absolutely.
Because that is so debilitating, and it changes your psyche. It changes everything about the way you think about yourself. And then you're left to try and sort things out when you've had maybe several years of somebody telling you how incapable you are and how wrong you are and how stupid you are and how ugly you are and blah, 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 blah. And now you're supposed to have the confidence to take charge and leave a relationship. I mean, that's asking a heck of a lot.
Yeah.
Of one person, I think. But getting back to the holiday thing, Pinkley, and I'm so glad that you came up with this topic, because it does, no matter what the statistics show, it does add extra pressure. And I think it's important for people who are going through these kinds of situations to understand that they're not alone. There are resources, and, of course, our hotline number, I'll give it one more time, 1-800-799-7233. And try to take care of yourself in the mix of taking care of everybody else. And I think that goes for any woman at this time of year, whether you're in an abusive relationship or not. Deborah, you got some thoughts for us?
I do, and, you know, we love to conclude with a quote, and so I have this wonderfully huge book called The New Quotable Woman, compiled by Elaine Partnow, and this is a woman who I don't know. Her name is Rona Barrett, and what her quote is that I thought was very applicable to us today is, the healthy, the strong individual is one who asks for help when she needs it, whether she's got an abscess on her knee or in her soul.
Ooh.
And how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think that's true.
That's a nice quote, Deb.
And, I mean, that is one of the most difficult things for me, was to go out and ask for help. So.
Yep.
Well, and again, that whole education thing. Educate yourself. You know, learn that this is not an acceptable way for people to interact. You know, learn about it and trust your gut. Pinkley, you got some words for everybody?
Well, I just wish everyone a wonderful holiday season, and with the care and love of family and friends. And the holidays can be an incredibly lonely and isolating time. And know that we're there, that we care, and we thank you, listeners, for listening in. And until next week, we are
Three Women,
Three Ways,
Three Divas.
Hey. Thanks for joining us. Join us again next week, 10 a.m. on Saturday. We'll have another topic. for all women and men. Thanks for joining us. See you next week.